Roy Little Jazz Eldridge was one of the great trumpeters of the swing era. Today, we revisit the Piano Jazz Archives with this program from 1987, when Roy Eldridge was Marion McPartland's guest.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
It's just great to have you here on the show. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Yeah, well, I have to say this. It is a distinct pleasure to be here with you today, because I can remember back first time I played the Embers. A lot of people don't know this. The reason I was in the Embers in the first place, I was working in Birdland. And
I've got to date this, Roy. You know, I hate to date it, but it was in 1950. I hate to tell you that.
I just come back from Europe. You're right.
I hate to tell you that, but it was. Anyway,
well, that's 30-some years ago. 36, right?
Yeah, it just went by like a flash.
Sure did. Well, anyhow, they used to use me as like certain guys would owe them money, and so I was always the band leader, you know?
Yeah.
In name only, you know? And they didn't give me a lot of trouble. The cats were, you know, everybody was a star, and they come late. So I just started doing what I used to do over in Europe. I'd like the violins do, strolling violins. I'd take a soft mute, and I'd go around to the tables and play just to get away from all the arguing and things at the bandstand. So I happened to pass by Ralph Watkins and his buddy Goldie, something like that. Mm-hmm. And he said, geez, that would be great for the Embers. You know?
Uh-huh.
So I'll never forget that. I didn't know you then.
No.
I'd heard of you, because I knew Jimmy from at least 50 years ago.
Yes, I know.
Least.
I know. I
knew him from Chicago, because we did sessions in the Sherman Hotel.
Sure.
But Eddie Haywood was there, and he had a hit record at that time, you know.
Yeah, he had Begin the Begin. He had that.
Right. Right. Right, right. So, but he had been coming by when I was working at Kelly's Stables and sitting in with me, you know.
Yeah.
I had the band there, and then we made records with Billie Holiday, and so I figured it'd be no sweat. I'd play with him, and then Coleman was coming in next week. He would play with you, and we'd probably get together, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd sit around there, and I had my music at rehearsal all that afternoon, and I wouldn't have felt so bad, but he never touched that piano once. He just sat up, and he spent the whole afternoon setting the lights on him. And I was fit to be tied.
Sounds like me.
Well, okay. What you do, you do what you have to do, right?
Yeah.
So finally I got to him. I said, hey, Eddie, I mean, you know, I got to go back on the island. You want to rehearse the thing? He says, well, I don't know how to speak to my lawyer. My manager, you know. So it was too late, and I had to go home because it's 5 o'clock comes up. You got that traffic. So I went home, and I came back that night. And you happened to be standing there. And I said, well, what's going to happen, Eddie? He said, well, my manager won't let me play for you. And you spoke up. You said, well, I'd be very honored and happy if you'd play with us, you know.
Did I really? What a fresh person.
No, that was not. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. I talked about that all over the world.
Well, you know, I was so thrilled to be able to do that. I mean, in a way, I was very delighted that I got the chance. Well, I was delighted I got the chance to play for you and Coleman Hawkins both. I mean, I didn't even know if I could handle it, but I guess
music. That's what you were doing.
Well, now, listen, speaking of letting somebody play, I'm going to let you play a piano number. And I'm going to noodle around and try not to get in the way. This is going to be something that you called Fast Boogie.
Right.
And so here goes.
Okay. Thank you.
Who said you don't play avant-garde? There was a chord in the middle there. That thing was crazy. Roy Eldridge, you've been holding out on me all these years.
No, see,
when I heard you play piano at Town Hall with the band, you know, then I knew that we could get together and do some things on the show. And I'm so glad you're here. But there's so many things that, you know, you've had such a long and illustrious and interesting and fabulous career. It's hard to know where to begin to ask you something. I was reading some stuff on the back of that album I brought with me today, and Phil Elwood did the liner notes, and he was talking about how when you were with Gene Krupa, that was really the big thing that happened for you. After you've gone, that's when everybody really started to get to know you. Is that true?
Well, it's true in this respect. That's when I started getting a lot of exposure.
Yeah.
See, remember, I'd been on the air in Chicago for 3 years straight, 7 nights a week.
Before that?
Yeah.
With other bands?
No, with my own band.
With your own band? Well, I know you played a place that I played later on, the Capitol Lounge. You played there, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, well, that was later years.
I get all mixed up with the dates. Well, where did you play in Chicago?
At the Three Deuces.
Oh.
In fact, Jimmy followed me in there. Jimmy McPartland followed me in there.
Right. As a matter of fact, and it's funny because he had Anita O'Day.
Right.
Working with him, and maybe that was before you worked with Anita.
I think she used to come in there and sing.
So when did you go with Gene? I mean, what happened? I know a lot of things happened before that. You were with Fletcher Henderson for a while, weren't you?
Well, I was with Fletcher Henderson before I went to the Three Deuces.
Oh.
And where I met, really, me and Gene became friends is, I don't know if you remember this record, Swing Is Here.
You know, I have to say I don't.
Yeah, well, you probably were. That's before
my
came
time
yeah.
in America. I think I was still in England.
Well, anyhow, he made the date in Chicago. He used Chewberry and Benny Goodman. And
that's one of the guys you hung out with a lot, wasn't it, Chewberry?
Yeah, well, always with tenor players.
Yeah,
like me and
players.
Coleman. But anyhow, we made this record. And it turned out real nice, you know. And what happened was that we became friends and... they had a strike, BMI and ASCAP or something like that.
Uh-huh.
This was in 37.
Uh-huh.
And, no, this was in 40 when this happened, because I was working at the Capitol Lounge.
Uh-huh.
And they needed some tunes, you know?
Oh, yes, so they'd use all these public domain tunes that weren't licensed to anybody.
So I had a tune we used to call Won't You Sit and Rear Back, and that tune turned out to be Drum Boogie.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And, Ball of Fire came late after I joined his band.
Oh, Ball of Fire. Could we do that? Do you think it's something we could play?
Well, we could mess around with it and see what get out.
I love that title. I mean, could you show me that thing?
Yeah.
Ball of Fire?
Well, right. Forget what key it is. Just,
all right. Count it off for me.
I'm going to make a little introduction. And when I start this rundown, then you know that's the time to just come in. Ready?
No, wait. Okay.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I better.
But the thing is so nice with the little bass line there.
Yeah, the bass line makes it nice, you know.
Yeah. You've got something you were telling me about, that, Roy, that I never heard you do, this little French song, Petite Laitue.
Yeah, could I explain that about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, of course.
Well, you know, when I was in Paris, I couldn't speak French, you know that.
Oh, you probably spoke enough.
No, after I moved in the neighborhood where nobody spoke English, I finally learned how.
I
refused to try to speak English, you know. So I figured I needed a song. So I got together with a couple of my friends, and I come up with this song called Un Petit Laitue. And by the way, it turned out to be a hit record over there.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, I mean, all the joints you're going to, the stops on the bus stops and things like that, they'd have it on the jukebox.
And all those little bars. And
yeah, the bar, oh, yeah. And it's a very simple tune.
Well, who wrote it?
Well, me and, I can't think of the French guy that plays tenor. He had charge of the, you heard of Vogue Records.
Oh, of course, Charles Delaunay. That was Charles Delaunay's label, wasn't it? Or he was,
no,
he was involved in it,
yeah.
I should say.
Well, those people, because they're the ones that kept me over there, you know.
Yeah, I know you were there on and off for a while, weren't you?
Well, no, I worked in that one joint 8 months until I went up to Sweden with Charlie Parker, and that's when I was supposed to stay 2 days, and I stayed 2 weeks.
Oh.
And I come back, my job was kind of gone.
Oh, my God, you know, there's so much to talk about. Have you written a book yet?
I'm writing one now.
Great, because, you know, all these experiences that jazz musicians have, it's just a shame if it's not all documented.
Yeah.
And then people try to tell a story about things that happened to you, and then they exaggerate or they don't tell it right. You know,
well,
they
try to make it like romantic or adventurous, and a lot of things, there's a lot of heartbreaks in this business and that people don't know about, you know?
Oh, boy, when I think of that book that Nat Hentoff wrote years ago with Nat Shapiro called Hear Me Talking to You, and there was a part in there, and you were talking to Nat about going with Gene Krupa and what a terrible hardship it was in the days when black musicians was so completely segregated. It's hard to believe that all this is happening in our lifetime, that, you know, you were not able to stay with the rest of the band at that time. Was that in the 30s?
No, it was in the 40s. I joined Gene in April 22nd, 1941.
I mean, that I know myself that happened, but people nowadays, I bet a lot of them don't realize that you had to go stay someplace else.
Well, you know, it's funny. It was a guy who used to sing with Jan Savitt called Bon Bon.
I know that name.
You know the name, Bon?
Yeah,
he's
sure.
A black dude, you know. And we were talking. We were in Boston. That's when we were staying at Mother's Lunch.
That was the name of it?
Well, yeah, it was the name. She had rooms, and she had you could board there too.
Yeah,
you know? And we were talking about it. And so he had been with this. See, they always say that I was the first one, or this one was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
He was there way before me, you know. And there's been somebody before me, for him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, he would say what he used to do was when they'd check in somewhere, he would have the band boy check in. That's Mr. Bon Bon, you know,
mm-hmm.
And take his bags on upstairs. Or he'd bring them in like he was the band boy,
oh.
You know. See, and then he'd say, can I have Mr. Bon Bon's key? Or take his bags upstairs. Okay, and they give you the key. So I tried that, and it worked. But this one morning, I was feeling pretty good, and I forgot the routine, and
yeah.
I asked for Mr. Eldridge's mail, and,
yeah.
And there was no mail, but he had a message for me.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'll take it. He said, where's Mr. Eldridge? I said, I'm Mr. Eldridge. What? I thought he was going to have a stroke. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, yeah, I was in such a paying the bill, you know. So he said, well, who checked you in? I said, I don't know. All I know, I was checked in, you know. And I said, you can go up and check your room and see if I stole anything or see if any black is on the sheets.
Oh, my God.
And go, yeah. So, you know, but there's a funny thing. I came back there the next year, and they were happy to see me.
Of course, they'd better be.
So, no, here's what makes you feel so bad. You get on the stage, and everybody loves you, you know?
Sure, yeah.
I come off the stage, I'm signing autographs. I give away two of those good Parker pens in those days, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They go across the street to get a drink. They didn't want to serve me, you know?
Isn't that awful?
Well, that's what was happening, you know?
Yeah.
Just grin and bear it, you know?
Well, I tell you, all the things that happened to you, you look mighty good on it, I must say, all the things you went through. I think all it did for you was improve your playing, and it's one of the most exciting things I ever heard in my life when I first heard you play years ago. Boy, which reminds me, we'd better go back to, we're getting sidetracked here, we'd better go back to France, where you were learning to speak French, and you made up this, wrote this tune. Petite Latou.
Petite Latou.
Yeah, are you going to do that?
I'm going to try.
Sing and play piano.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just sit and watch.
See if I can make it. Latou means milk. The rest of the lyrics I don't know, but they're all nice and clean, so don't worry about it.
Oh, what a shame.
Qu'est-ce que de all? Qu'est-ce que de fait? Shoo boo dee boo loo dee 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 boo dee doo, c'est mon désir. Soisson, boisson. Ça, c'est bon plat. Chambo, deep, 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 toujours la même histoire. C'est la même. La même folie, un petit Latou, des tomates, avec de la mayonnaise, qu'est-ce qu'il y a? Qu'est-ce que de bois? Qu'est-ce que de dit? C'est du yo, yes, I mean, un petit Latou, des tomates, avec de la mayonnaise, qu'est-ce qu'il y a? Qu'est-ce que tu dis? Qu'est-ce que de all? Shampoo did, libido, do, did, libido. Oh, petite, petite, le tout. Oh, de tomat. Avec de la. There la mayonnaise, oh lo do di di boo, zibo do 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 lo di do di, oh yeah.
That is really a cute song. Is it? But. You must probably have written that for some girl that's sitting there admiring you.
I don't even know what it means. I did at that point. It means like there's milk in it, there's mayonnaise in it, there's dishes in it, and there's fish in it, you know.
You're just trying out all your new French words.
Just all the words. Just putting the lyrics all together with some French words.
Some French scat.
Yeah.
Well, that's really nice. You know, you have, even though you're not playing the horn anymore, it's great that you still sing and play piano. And don't you go around? You were just in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I did the thing with the swing reunion.
Now, what did you do? Did you sing?
Sang. The same. It wasn't over nice, too.
What things did you sing?
I did, let me see, what did I do there? I did Bloodshot Eyes.
Oh.
And I did I Want a Little Girl.
Oh, we can do that one.
Yeah.
A little later on, maybe we can do that.
Yeah.
What else did you do?
Well, I'm trying to figure what else I did.
I know that one of your biggest numbers was Rocking Chair. Do you ever do that? Do you sing it? Or
No. I hate that number.
Do you really?
Yes, I can't. There's a big story behind that number.
Oh, is there?
First of all.
Is it one you can tell?
Yeah, I can tell. Anything I did, I can tell, you know, as long as it's in music, right? No, the reason I say that is because when we made that date, you wouldn't know about this, Liederkranz. You ever heard of Liederkranz Hall?
Yes.
Well, then you do know that. You've been here long, and you said you have.
Well, I know of it. I can't tell you where it is, Liederkranz Hall. What town's it in?
In New York City.
Oh, see?
All right, yeah.
Sorry.
You got out that real good. We had a record date with Gene, and all the four trumpet players, except me, the lips was bad.
Oh.
This is all Scott's truth. So I was playing, like, first parts, second parts, solos, back to first parts. And then on the end of the thing, because Basie was waiting to come in, he was going to record that day, Gene called Rocking Chair. Now, in the meantime, I had been tasting, you know, to keep my nerves up and my spirit up and everything, you know. Now, I'm out of it. I don't want to play Rocking Chair no kind of way. Not at this time of night. You know, give me a fair chance. It's my feature, me alone, right? He played it anyhow. Two takes. I went to him crying and said, Gene, please don't put that out. And I figured he wasn't going to put it out. We go to the coast. Ben Webster meets me. We went to have breakfast. And he said, I got a record I want you to hear. Trump players, he's bad, yeah? So I figured it was a new cat or Louis, somebody like that, you know? He put the, it was a nickel to put the jukebox in. Put the nickel in the jukebox. And I heard this introduction. And vaguely, it came in my mind that, I said, no, it can't be. As it got a little farther, I said, well, who in the hell is this, you know? And then all of a sudden, it got down in the course, and I could hear my sound, you know?
Uh-oh.
And I was so surprised, you know, that it had turned out like that, because it was all like something out of a dream.
But it turned out real good, though, didn't it?
Yes.
See?
No see. I finally joined Gene's band. When I joined Gene's band.
Yeah.
We're playing in the Pennsylvania Hotel.
Yeah.
That's when I first joined him, and there's two old ladies sitting down front. And I wasn't actually in the band, I was just featured in it. It's before I got into sitting playing the book, you know. And I walked out there, and I thought they was going to have a heart attack, you know. And they just knew I was going to blow them out of the building, you know. So I had to play Rocking Chair, and I played it, and I tried to play it as soft as I could. And the only thing was wrong, when I hit that F on the end, I was trying to play it soft, and I must have split it into a million pieces, man. And I was so embarrassed.
You were trying to play it quietly for the...
So I wouldn't disturb them, you know?
Oh, that's funny.
And ever since then, I've just hate to play that tune, you know?
Well, then that's fine. Then nobody shall play it. I won't play it.
Well, you can play it. I like to hear it, but I mean, you know.
Well, I'll try it.
Yeah, play it.
I'll try it.
It's got some good changes in it.
Let's see. All right, here goes. This is Hoagie's tune, isn't it? Hoagie Carmichael.
Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful.
You know, it's funny. I just realized after I started that, that I never have played that tune except backing somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, well, I just love the tune anyway.
It's a good tune.
Although I can understand why you would wind up not liking it after you had to go through all that pain and misery.
Well, you know, not only pain and misery. You know, it's funny. When I was living in Paris, a couple school teachers were professors, you know, and they used to come by and see me every night at the club where I was working, Club Sergeant Major Dupre. And they would say, play Rocking Chair. Well, I was drinking. I only had two sets to play a night because I didn't have no work permit. So they would say, I know you were cold sober when you made that Rocking Chair, you know. So one night they caught me up where I wasn't feeling too bad. I said, listen, you want to know the truth? I was blind drunk. I didn't even know who was playing Trump when it first came
out. Oh, you blew their image.
Yeah, I know.
Or vice really, versa. They... to ask you something about things they did years ago that nobody, I don't think people, kids or musicians today even know what you're talking about if you talk about a cutting session. Remember when they had that, where people would sit in and like we were talking about with Art Tatum and Clyde Hart and different piano players, would go and sit in and really cut somebody to ribbons with their playing.
Yeah.
Didn't you do that a lot, like with Ben Webster? And tell me some of the people you got involved with in these things.
Oh, I got a real dressing down. You know, Rex Stewart was working in my brother's band, Eli Serenaders. That's before I was playing professionally. And he stayed at our house, and he showed me a couple of riffs. And when Fletcher's band would come to town, he would always bring me and let me sit behind him and show me where he was reading, you know. And by this time, I'm in New York, and I'm working at Small's Paradise. And he came down, and I want him to hear me, you know. You're just like, somebody's just like a father to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was standing off the side, and I was signifying, because I thought I could play, really. Because I'd spend 8 or 9 hours a day. I had a lot of technique, but I didn't have no kind of heart. I spent all my time learning technique and chops, you know. So Rex picked up the other guy's horn was in the bandstand. He played a little bit. He said, I'll meet you at the rhythm club. It's okay. We got down to the rhythm club. He didn't want to play there. We went to a place called Greasy's, 129th Street.
There
was Rex, myself, Red Allen, Gus Akins, and another trumpet player. I can't recall his name. And then all of Fletcher's guys. And man, the joint was loaded, believe me. So Fletcher's band was a real signifying band, you know. Once that something starts like that, they're going to get on the underdog side, you know. Every time I'd play, they would make like I'd really, really played up a storm, you know. And Rex, they wouldn't make no sound at all. And Rex was getting madder and madder, you know. And I was getting embarrassed because this is the cat I idolize, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So finally, they had a thing that they used to do in New York then. If you play in your course, I'll stomp on your last 8 bars, that means I'm coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Look out, I'm coming in, see?
Yeah, okay.
So I stomped on Rex, and I screamed a G. About my highest note, G and an A, mm-hmm. I could get an A out.
Mm-hmm.
But I never thought about B flat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Rex stomped on me, didn't let the other guys, and he screamed the loudest B flat I'd ever heard in my life. And I'm telling you, it scared me. Yeah, I put my horn down, I said, that's B flat. How did he do that? You know? So I just put my horn in the case. And I was almost in tears, really. And I told the other cats, you can't play as high as me, so you might as well give it up. And that was the end of that contest. But I caught him 2 years later. Because I remembered what he didn't do. He hit that note, but he never played up there and played down and went back up again. And when I met him the next time, I could play up to B flat and play up and down. So I got him that time. So the next time after that, neither one of us played waiting for the other to do something.
that's funny.
Yeah.
It's a shame that some of that sitting in has gone out. I mean, nowadays people have their own thing together, and, you know, sitting in is, you don't have it happen too much. Although I used to love sitting in over there when you were at Jimmy Ryan's.
Yeah.
That was a ball. You were there, and you were there for 1970 on, weren't you?
Yeah, I was there for about 10 years.
Jesus. That was terrific.
The and Eddie, you know, Locke. What you missed the point is, you don't have all the joints that you have where you can sit in like they did now, you know?
I guess that's
the joints
it.
Now, you got to have some bread to get it, or show your badge who you are, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And then you had joints all up. Listen, I used to go stay up to 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon jamming, me and Chew. But you can't do that now. Where can you go and jam after 3 o'clock?
Yeah, it's true. Well, maybe it'll all come around again. I hope so, because I miss it. I would love to go out someplace to sit in. Well, anyway, back to the music. How about the one you were talking about earlier, I Want a Little Girl?
Can you
sing that? You sing that one, and I'll play it for you.
That'd be nice.
Okay?
I dig that better.
Gee, I guess it should be a little identifying here, in case somebody just tuned in. I'm Marion McPartland, and over there on the right is Roy Eldridge, and he's going to sing I Want a Little Girl. I'm going to accompany you, okay? Here I go.
I want a little girl to love a lot. I give her everything I got. Just a little girl to fall in love with me. Oh, baby, can't you see? I want a little girl. She don't have to look like the girl in the picture book. But if she can cook, she'll fit me to a tease. She don't have to wave her hair or dress in fancy clothes. I don't even care if she don't wear silken hose. I want a little girl that's all alone, one that I can call my very own. Just a little girl to fall in love with me. Oh, take away, Marion. In fancy clothes, I don't even care if she don't wear silken hose. I want a little girl that's all alone, one that I can call my very own. Just a little girl to fall in love with me. Can't you see? I want a little girl. I want a little girl. I want a little girl to fall in love with me. Baby, can't you see?
That's terrific. I love that tune.
Yeah, I do too.
And the way you do it. I don't know, but that's the most distinctive kind of singing. Musicians have a way of making a tune so distinctive. But you have a great style. It's a kick.
You know, it's a funny thing about it. Because I wasn't thinking about singing. My teacher told me years ago, never sing, and you last.
you mean your trumpet teacher?
Yeah, he told me never,
never
sing.
Sing.
No, no.
Well, you didn't. It's a good job you didn't take his advice.
I guess so, but I had to hear.
Which reminds me, you're from Pittsburgh originally, yeah. Aren't you? When did you, who got you started? How did you get started?
Well, to tell you the truth, Mary, my mother played piano, you know. But she didn't read no music and had no training, but she was the type of person that could go to the theater. They had piano players playing for all the movies in, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And whatever she heard the guy play, she could come home and play it.
Uh-huh.
And I played drums, you know.
Yeah. See, I know you recorded recorded on drums too, didn't you?
I played every theater in Broadway for Gene. Gene conducted. I can play shows because that's really the thing where I can get to, you know. I say used to could get to. But I had my little set of drums, and we'd come from the theater, and she would play these songs. And that music was just given to me. Because as I was taking lessons, the mistake that the teacher would make is if he would play it, I could play it. Never knew what key. I played a long time before I knew what key I was playing in.
You mean you'd say to him, why don't you play this so I can hear it?
No, he would just play it for me. Give me an example. You know, I was just starting out, you know.
Yeah.
But he always played these things before me. Mm-hmm. Once he played, I had it.
Because he had such a great ear.
Yeah.
Well, of course, later on, though, you did learn to read when you got with bands.
I had to.
You had to.
I got tricked. I guess when I went, I got stranded about 70 miles from home. And I stayed out rather than, you know, geez, I'm writing a book here.
Yeah.
But anyhow, make a long story short, I ended up on the carnival. We had 33 pieces. They hired me because I played like a saxophone. See, all my life, my brother being a saxophone player, and I got the job by playing Coleman Hawkins' course on Stampede, right? And and I'm out in this big open, it's carnival, you know, and they're playing that oomp all behind me, you know, and this arrangement. They got the arrangement for this thing, and you couldn't hardly hear me.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, to make a long story short, the blues singers used to like for me to play behind them, and the piano player hated me. Every time I'd play behind him, he would, right in front of the people, man, he would say some awful nasty things to me, you know. Well, that's a long story.
But anyhow, well, but you know, you wound up playing on some very important sessions with Billie Holiday.
Not only Billie Holiday, before that.
Who?
Ida Cox.
Oh, Ida Cox, yeah. Sure, I know of her, too. But those things of Billie's, those are the real famous ones. Some of them, Miss Brown to You, and, what was the other one? I can't remember it now. There were two.
Well, I made a lot of records.
Anyway, you must have thousands of records out. Probably some you don't even know about.
I just seen another one about a week ago. That was taken out of somebody's house.
Put it out.
Yeah.
It's incredible, isn't it? You know, and people go to a concert and they're probably taping, and you don't even know it. And years later, they put it out.
But this is before they were doing that. Say, for instance, I come to your house, we have, you know, you love to play.
Yeah.
Jerry Newman's got it. You ever hear the records that Jerry Newman's got out?
No.
From Minton's and all of that?
No.
Well, he's got that out, and this was at his house. And I said to him, I said, Jerry, you're not going to put these records out. Oh, no, this is just for me. And he made me a copy and stuff, so I was happy, you know. Now they're out on, it's out, they're selling them.
Listen, we could talk about that
for
hours,
talking,
you know.
But, don't ever get me to talking.
But I want to play another tune for you because this is one we talked about earlier, and it's from the archives, Indian Summer.
That's beautiful.
You like that tune?
Yeah, I haven't heard that in ages either.
Well, you know, I haven't either. Let's see if I know how it goes.
Oh, you're straight. Thank you. Beautiful, ooh. Beautiful. That was beautiful.
I'm just showing off or trying to show off for you. You know, trying
Listen, you don't have to show off. I know you can play it. That's beautiful.
But while I'm doing it, well, it's funny. While I'm doing that, I'm thinking, thinking, sitting in on that piano at Ryan's. That really was some piano over there. I don't know which. We've had our share of playing clubs with bad instruments, haven't we? Like,
well, you know what we used to do when you're on the road, you know, like a one-nighter.
Yeah.
And you, the bad piano, each guy comes by, gets him a couple of mallets and so, you know. But you know what happens? That starts backfiring. So the cat leaves it there. When you come back, you got this mallet.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, we've been sitting here gabbing all afternoon, Roy Eldridge, and there's so many things I still wanted to ask you. We didn't talk about jazz at the Philharmonic and didn't talk about some of the records you made with Oscar Peterson. There's just so many things. You'll have to come back and do another show.
Okay. And, my pleasure.
I want to tell you, it's just been such a joy. I've been a fan of yours since before we played at the Embers.
Well, you know, got a fan. I'm your fan.
So, anyway, it's been great. And, let's make a wild finish with, what is this going to be? M&R Blues?
Yeah, Marion and Roy.
Marion and Roy. Okay, here goes. You start it out.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.